Expo Bomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I'm hearing voices, animal noises, the tremor of cool, the feminine of this soon, reaching my threshold, staring at the tree till I'm blind.
Hello, boys and girls and weirdos who play with the night. Welcome once again to another lovely episode of After Rot. Tonight we have Ralph Tedesco on as a guest from Zinescope, co-founder there, and he is awesome. How's it going, Ralph?
It's going well. Thank
Excellent.
You for having
me. Just so you know, I hear you in my right ear and I hear me in my left ear, but that's how I record.
Okay.
It's a weird thing. It's just the way it is.
Fair.
So, what's new and exciting?
Well, you might hear some sounds of chewing or snorting in the background. I apologize. I give my French bulldog a bone to chew, and she is going to town. So that's what's new for her, at least, a new bone.
Well, dogs are going to dog, right? I can hear you now.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, my phone my phone locked. That's weird. Okay, sorry about that.
No worries. Like I always say, it's not a show unless there's technical difficulties.
We're having technical problems so far, immense technical problems from the get-go.
But it happens. We've had worse.
That's the night is young.
I can pretty much guarantee that the website's not going to go down in the middle of the show, but
that's good.
I'll knock on some wood.
Good. Sure. Well, I'll make sure my phone doesn't lock up again, hopefully.
Okay, it's odd that it would need that. Are you using the Skype app, or are you using...
I am just using the browser.
Okay. So it's the web
that's
link.
That's probably why. When I clicked the link, I don't think I had the app on. I downloaded, so it just went right to the browser. Anyway.
Gotcha. That will do it.
That'll do it. I didn't even think of it.
Yeah, it happens. We're zombies, so we roll with it. It's all good. So, I don't know if you know this or not, but I've been reading Zinescope comics for a long time. Personally. Like, I have the first Grim Fairy Tales series up to about issue 125.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Well, I used not to collect everybody. A lot of GFT.
You have all of them, or...
I think I'm missing one, like issue number two.
Oh, wow. You have issue one?
I think I started reading at issue 3.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah. That's fun stuff. So, give us a little bit of a history and a rundown on Zinescope. Like I said, I can see that it was founded in 2005 by you and Joe Brucia, and I probably mispronounced his last name.
So, a little bit, but he's not here to defend himself. it's actually Zinescope. A lot of people do say Zinescope, so... You're welcome to it, but what it's supposed to be Zinescope. And we started it in 2005, me and Joe. And we started really with the Grim Fairy Tale stuff, doing reinventions of classic fairy tales. You know, we kind of had this idea for doing a... sort of like a Tales from the Crypt or Twilight. We were huge Tales from the Crypt fans growing up. So doing like sort of Tales from the Crypt or Twilight Zone meets fairy tales. So that was sort of this idea of a comic. We had never written a comic book before. I wasn't really involved in the comic book industry in any way. I didn't really know that much about comic books at the time. So, but we were...
Yeah, you wouldn't notice that.
What's that?
We wouldn't notice that you haven't been doing it for a while.
Good to know. we were writing partners. We had written a couple screenplays together. But other than that, like, we didn't really... We just kind of dove into writing the comic book series. So Grim Fairy Tales kind of took off for us early on. At that time, nobody was really doing anything like that. Fables was out at that point, I think. But it's a completely different series. And then that sort of just kind of put us on the map. And, well, we self-published it. Back then, there was no such thing as Kickstarter. So we had to put all our own money into it and pray. you know, and a lot of people were like, you guys are insane, but, you know, we were in our 20s. I was in my 20s, at least. Joe was a little bit older. He was in his early 30s. And so we threw caution to the wind and published our first comic book. And then when that took off, we started doing more of the, you know, reinventions of different fairy tales and stuff like that. Fable. So we did Neverland. We did Wonder. When we put out the Wonderland series with Raven Gregory, wrote that. Now, at the time, Raven was writing this comic book series called The Gift.
Yep, I have that one.
And then he wrote Return to Wonderland, Beyond Wonderland, and Escape from Wonderland, which was a trilogy that did really, really well for us and kind of cemented us as this sort of publisher who did the reinventions of fairy tales and fables and stuff, and then the sexy cover stuff, of course. Which
awesome.
You know, has done well for us over the years and has gotten a lot of love over the years, and have also garnered a lot of like of the detractors who are for some reason offended by sexy comic book art.
That's one of the things I really do want to talk about, sexy comic book art. And shit, oh, by the way, it's okay to swear. Shit tons of variant covers, special editions, variants that have all kinds of relevance or not relevance. What prompted it to be sexy girls in comics? Which I don't disagree with, by the way, because I have a few of them.
Yeah, at the time, we just knew the audience of comic book readers were male. The demographic was men in their 20s, really it was more like late 20s to 50 or so was the main demographic of the comic book reader. We figured, you know, we didn't really think of it. Like, it was sort of like, oh, we have fairy tale, we're doing fairy tale reinventions, let's add some like sex appeal on the covers. You know, we never never cared to do like any sexy interiors or have any like R-rated interiors in terms of like sex or anything like that. But it was the cover idea of like, hey, grab them with a cool cover or grab them with a sexy cover, you know? Girls in fairy tale costumes are kind of
popular on cosplay people.
And this was 2005, so different time, I guess, and people weren't nearly as offended, or I should say people didn't pretend to be as offended back then. And yeah, I mean, like those, we kind of feel like we brought that market back from the dead for a little, because I think for like that, it kind of crashed in the 90s, like with all the, all those other covers, that the sexy cover revolution, that was going on in the 90s, and it kind of crashed, and then they were kind of gone for a little while. And then we came on the scene and started doing it again. And that's when, you know, that we were the company that was doing the sexy cover. Like, we took that spot right away, right? We took that mantle right away, it felt like.
Cool.
And then, you know, of course, that's where some people just were like, oh, I'm never reading Zenoscope because all they do is porn. It's like, okay, cool. Like,
I should redirect them to another comic book series that is banned in Canada.
What's that?
Belladonna.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there was a whole thing where I was bringing it in for a customer. Oh, by the way, I also have a comic shop. So I was bringing it in for a customer, selling it to them on time. It's like, okay, I didn't really care, but it was not that big a deal. It's just some nudity, whatever. And then there's the one issue that has hardcore porn in it. And it's like, I was not expecting to see that. And apparently neither was the Canadian government. So they put them on a banned list.
That's crazy.
It's so weird. Now Diamond won't ship across the border.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
In Canada, too. Like, it's funny because when we've gone to, like, the UK, nobody there cares. Like, nobody overseas cares about the sexy thing. Like, yeah. They don't even think twice about it.
That stuff is fine. Yeah. But the thing is, they didn't declare it.
Yeah.
You have to declare that. You have to pay, give it a content rating that says hardcore sex and pride.
Right. Well, I don't know that comic personally, but I can imagine. Yeah, like we've never gotten to that point. So
good, because then I can still keep buying it.
Yeah, we never do, like, we don't do the sex in our comics or any like nudity in the comics or anything. So we've never had an issue with Canada or shipping it overseas.
Or any issue with any other countries?
Yeah, we ship through Diamond. We rarely ship. You know, we will ship to retailers directly in the U.S. and I think some in Canada ourselves. But overseas,
your promos come up in my email all the time.
Yeah, so generally, I think overseas is generally through Diamond, as far as I understand it.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you guys are listed in Diamond as a premium reseller now, or a comic manufacturer, right?
Correct.
Which is cool.
They made us a premium publisher. I mean, at this point, we were like, hey, we've been with you since 2005, and, you know, we do a lot of business. I think it's time to do...
Step it up.
I don't know if we're up. Like, I assume we moved up in the catalog finally. For years, we were like the last. We were last in the catalog.
Yeah, you were alphabetical.
Yeah, so.
It's always funny. It's like, okay, I just jump right over to Zenoscope.
Yeah.
Let's see, where are you now?
The back. I mean, you see all the publishers up there, like with the A names. There's like 1,000 A name publishers.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole marketing thing. Is you pick your name to be either at the top of the alphabet or the bottom, so that it's easier to find. Because most people will just straight to the top or straight to the bottom.
Well, for years, I mean, we never thought of it when we created our, or we didn't even think of that, to be honest with you. We wouldn't have thought, we didn't think twice about, like, oh, we'll be at the bottom of the catalog. That's not great. you know, that just happened kind of on accident. And people were like, oh, you must be doing it on purpose. They're like, no, we really didn't. We didn't have a clue.
Where does the name come from?
Yeah, good question. I don't know.
Okay.
Everybody's like, oh, you guys got to come up with a better story. It's really just like this idea of like marrying. Like Joe really liked the list. Like he loved like name. Like he wanted to do like a name like kind of like at the time. Like if you remember Interscope Records, he was like obsessed with this like scope. Because like just having a scope of different forms of media was always our plan. And then sort of the Zen of it all and like marrying Zen with scope, and it kind of just kind of happened like that. There's no exciting name to it. There's no exciting reason.
So it wasn't like, based in Greek mythology and the concept of whatever?
No, it was not, but I can pretend it is.
Absolutely. Take it.
Yeah, there you go.
I can come up with good origins for words and stuff. It's what I do for fun.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So one of the things that I did like about some of the comics that you guys do put out is the horror stuff. So you mentioned the was it The Waking? No, you mentioned something. The Gift.
The Gift was the now gift that was Raven. Yeah, so The Gift was an Image comic that Raven put out. Right. The Waking was also a comic we published that right. Raven as well.
That's why I was connecting the two.
Yes. And The Waking's really cool. We actually developed a script for it recently, but it's about about murder victims coming back from the dead to avenge their murder. So it's, yeah, I guess it does have a zombie element to it. But it's sort of zombies with a purpose. And that did pretty well. We did a lot of horror comics early on and still do, and that's sort of what we like to do is horror comics. So we feel like we're pretty good at it. And now we're getting more and more into the film and TV development side of things. So we're developing movies based on our comic books, our IP.
Cool. Now, I did come across somewhere that Van Helsing, TV show on Netflix or whatever, for about four or five seasons now.
Right.
Based off one of your comics?
It was. It ran for about five seasons, five or six. I can't even remember anymore. It was on Sci-Fi Channel, and then it should be on Netflix now, too. It was loosely based on the comics. So, like, we sold it to Sci-Fi. When we sold it, they asked us to come up with a treatment. They wanted to change, like, so much. They really didn't even read the comic book.
Yeah, I was going to say, I watched the first season. It was like, this is nothing like the comic book, except for the name. Like,
they really liked the head of the, at the time, the head of the network of that particular department, I should say, was really into the concept of a female Van Helsing, and he was like, this is really cool, like, but I want to do, and he already had his own ideas of what he wanted to do, so he's like, what if we change this and this, and we were like, okay, like, sure, and then it became like really changed, and it really didn't become what we envisioned.
Post-apocalyptic vampire stories.
Yeah, I mean, it really changed into something else. And that was our first sort of like lesson of like developing. Like, we were like, okay, well, we don't want to do that again. Because, did we get a, we're producing it and we're involved and it's a paycheck, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, that's.
You got money, you got your name out. And now you can go and do things better.
Get something on air is nice. You know, it's hard to get stuff on air, and especially to run for that many seasons. But now we have a much bigger hand in all of our development stuff and sort of become my full-time position in the company because at that time, I was still editor-in-chief of Zenoscope. So Joe and I were kind of like not as, I mean, we were actively involved in pitching our stuff and taking it out to and stuff, but we didn't really actively like get that involved in how it would be developed or how it would be adapted. So after that, we kind of said, okay, like, let's be more hands on here and learn how this business works better, because we knew, with all the amount of titles we put out a lot of books. We knew, like, and there was always something in development, right? There was always something in being optioned. Does that mean it's going to get made? Hell no, because it's very hard to get on, as we learned over the last 18 years. But there's always stuff getting pitched and there's always stuff being developed. So we just decided we needed to, like, be more.
Well, I'll just have to edit in post, as those movie people say. I'll probably just leave it in, because what the hell?
It doesn't matter. It adds to the what does it add to?
Flavor.
The character. Yeah. So, long story short, the horror stuff is really our bread and butter now, I think. And of course, the fairy tale stuff. I mean, the fairy tale stuff in that connected universe. We have a very large shared universe.
How many different properties are connected in that universe? Because I know of four of them off the top of my head.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, God, a lot now. I mean, if you go back to like Neverland.
Okay. Wonderland, I feel the silence.
Wonderland, Neverland, Oz, Mystere, Inferno, Hellchild, Bell, Robin Hood. There's a lot.
Don't forget Oz.
Oz. There's a lot. I mean, and some are not current. Like, some of those spinoffs, you know, we don't currently publish. Like Inferno will do like a quarterly, or not even a quarterly. Like, we might do an Inferno once a year now, or
cool.
Stuff like that. So, like, we have characters that come in quarterly. We have characters, because we don't necessarily do monthly issues with all our titles. We do a lot of like oversized one shots now. We do some ongoing. Like, Grim Fairy Tales has been ongoing since 2005. We have,
is that volume 2 or volume 3 now?
It's still volume 2.
Okay.
we're at issue 75-ish, 76.
Ooh, so, big double issue for that, isn't it?
Yeah, 75 was big. Yeah, so we did. We're at, I mean, that's literally 200 issues of just the Grim Fairy Tales series. I mean, and then the, you know, you have your, you know, million, you know, 100 million spinoffs, as well. So,
so was every issue of Grimm a single story riffing off of one of the many, many, many Hans Christian Andersen and all the other fairy tale things, or did they have long, ongoing arcs?
You mean the, yeah, I mean, eventually we ran out of, we ran out, you know, early, we ran out of, like, known fairy tales, like, the first, like, 20 issues, we were like, okay, we gotta start figuring this out, like, the Grimm Brothers, stories, I mean, there's only so many well-known ones, so we kind of, the story just evolved from doing like these Cinderella, Pied Piper, you know, with these one shot issues ran thin. So we started to evolve into doing more of a an ongoing story. So the entire series really became about Celia Mathers, who in our versus, like, she's Snow White essentially, but it's a modern retelling of a modern take, I guess. And it's almost like these superheroes live within our these fairy tale characters live within our world, but they have elevated abilities, and then there's these realms that surround Earth that, or these other dimensions, I should say, that are part of Earth that we just can't see, that include Neverland, Wonderland, Oz, and Mist, and these beings come from those dimensions, and really just became a little bit of like an Avengers meets, like, you know, modern day fantasy series. So it really evolved from like what it was originally, which was like more of a Twilight Zone meets the fairy tales, to this sort of new version, I guess you should say.
Well, I've always been a fan of Cindy as a psychotic serial killer.
Well, who isn't?
I know. Little cheerleader outfit with a big katana going around slicing and dicing in Julianne.
Exactly.
Yeah. What's not to like?
Great.
So. And it sets itself different from Fables, where Cinderella is a secret agent in Fables.
Oh, is she? Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. In our version, Cinderella's very much a psychotic... she's like a psychotic Deadpool.
Yeah, and that's what makes her lovable.
So we have a lot of fun with our characters.
Cool. And do you still come up with are you still trying to come up with new characters, new worlds to play with, or are you just trying to stay within the demence that you have?
In terms of new worlds, in terms of new characters, or you mean new, like, worlds that spin off from, like the Neverland, Oz, etc.
Spin-off worlds, because you got to always keep creating new characters, otherwise the comic book dies.
If it so works out that way, yes. You know, the universe itself, the shared universe itself, you know, if there's a way, like, we also have, like, different, like, it's pretty vast. Like, we follow all the characters and all the storylines. Like, we have Inferno, which is really just a hell, like, it's another world within, it's another dimension in that world. If it works out that way, we would totally explore it. Next year, we're coming out with, we just came out with a new Sherlock Holmes character that is part of our universe. Sorry for the creaking. And we're doing a Holmes and Houdini series, which is about Houdini's granddaughter teaming up with our version of Sherlock Holmes, which is a female as well, and it's like sort of a two-hander series that lives within that universe as well.
Excellent.
So we're always doing new stuff and new spins on you know, existing IP, existing public domain
IP. I was going to say, do you stay with public domain or do you get into licensing?
We don't really do any more we've done licensing. We've done a lot of licensing in the past, but we don't do it actively as much. We published the Seven comic book back in the day when we first started publishing. Like, that was a really big deal for us. Did really well for us, which was based on the movie Seven, Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman movie. The Gen Zers will
What's
never...
What's in the box?
The Gen Zers won't really probably know that movie. But that was a big hit for us. We did Final Destination. We did Charmed for a while.
I was going to say, I remember Charmed.
Yeah, we did. Then we worked with a lot of people don't know. We have an all ages imprint. So we worked with Discovery Channel and History Channel for a long time, and we did a bunch of educational shark books. We did top 10
deadliest. I have seen that.
Top 10 deadliest sharks. We did.
There's a dinosaur one, isn't there?
Dinosaur one. We did Mankind, based on the limited series by History Channel. We did a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff with Discovery and History Channel for a while. And then we did the Vikings comic book every year for Comic-Con for like several years as well. So, and that was fun because we got to work with the Vikings showrunner, who's Michael Hirst. He's a super smart dude, like way too smart. Mm-hmm. And we got to like work with him each year for the comic book, and just like adapt, and I like he would kind of pitch us an idea, and then we'd take that and run with it, and that was cool. Fun. Yeah, so we do some, and that wasn't even a licensing deal; that was actually them hiring us as a studio.
So it was marketing for them.
Yeah, and we would print like. They would print like 20,000 copies of the comics and give them away at Comic-Con every year. We don't really get into licensing battles, I should say, because it's not really our bread and butter. We rather create our own stuff. Like, it just doesn't. I don't know. It's just a lot of. It's a pain, to be honest, to do licensing.
So you don't want to be like Funko?
Well, if I was making...
if you're making that kind of bank, sure.
If I was making those things, that's a different story. But I don't want to be like IDW who has to like... I mean, like IDW, Dark Horse, those guys all like... I mean, I understand it. It just seems like a lot.
Yeah, that's true. And it seems like...
I wouldn't want to, I don't know, like if the license was right and it like kind of made sense for our brand, sure.
Evil Dead.
Evil Dead would be cool. We would love to do Stephen King. We almost got Stephen King licensed before we went to Marvel back in the day.
And now it's not with Marvel.
Now, who's it with now?
It's with some small, very small company who seems to be slow at producing all of the reprints of the books.
Yeah, they kind of... What sucks is we went hard after it before we had anything out. Like, we were coming out with Grim Fairy Tales issues, and like the first issue hadn't even hit yet, and we thought we were going to land the license, and because we did this really cool, we just mocked up the comics, and they looked great, and they were interested, and then last minute they kind of like pulled a 180, and we're like, we're going with Marvel, and we're like, okay, cool.
Well, Marvel did have the distribution, so.
They did, and we kind of understood it. Just it was kind of like we thought it was a slam dunk at the time because we were told by one of the reps that we had it. And we were like, okay, great. And then we didn't have it, and we were like, okay, this sucks. So I didn't even realize that another company was doing it now.
It's started coming out from not Marvel about 3 years ago. Yeah, I think just before COVID hit.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that said, that kind of then changed our focus to doing Seven, which was our first licensed book.
And Seven was cool.
Seven and then Final Destination. We did that for a series as well.
Woof.
Stop it, guys.
Heard the dogs.
Dogs are...
As I said, dogs will dog.
Dogs are dogs.
Cats will cat, dogs will dog. And people will people. And sometimes it's good and sometimes less so.
Most times less so.
I'm not going to say much because I have to drive in the city of Toronto, and it's like, half you people should get off the road and not be in front of me when I'm driving.
Well.
And I'm being judicious when I say half.
I lived in L.A. for a while. So,
oh, yeah. I've heard about that.
Like, that's one of that you can't really even compare. I mean, living in Austin now, I mean, Austin drivers are really bad, too, I must say. But it's not nearly as bad as L.A.
I think any big city, you're going to have a full bouquet of people who think they have the right of way all the time.
Yeah.
So
true.
One of my most interesting interviews that I've had on was a director for a movie and two of his actors. And he was on the highway for the entire interview.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's like... well, he's disappeared for a bit, so yeah, we'll keep talking on the other stuff and then bring him back in every few minutes. That's cool.
Okay. interviewed Greg Horn.
Nice. I like his artwork.
So Greg's done a lot of work for us, and we do monthly live streams, sort of, you know, basically like where we do like live stream comic cons, I should call them. And we sell products on the live streams every month, and we do interviews with creators we've worked with. And Greg Horn came on with us last month, and like it was like the worst thing. So like his connection was so bad. So like it just kept cutting out on him. And then it would be like me and my other co-host who was interviewing Greg, kind of just talking with each other, and then like Greg popping back on every like couple minutes and then freezing, and then it devolved into every time Greg popped on he would just be cursing. and then
I'd love to have that guest.
Two times he was just drinking, like sitting there staring into space, just drinking a whiskey, looking like so defeated. And it was just one of those interviews that it was kind of funny. It made for an interesting time, but he was definitely very frustrated.
Well, I'm gonna have to look that up and listen, watch it, or listen to it, because it's like I can relate.
Yeah, no, I get it. So we do these. We do them a lot too. So there's always some kind of issues going on.
So I see a lot of artists doing similar things where they do the little 5-minute clip or whatever. I was like, hey, this is me drawing stuff. And I think that's cool. I mean, the influx of social media must have made a good impact on the marketing and the business cycle for you guys, because a lot of it's free advertising.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, definitely shifted the way things are done in the industry just being able to reach, you know, social media in general, just being able to reach a new audience. And then during COVID, being shifting into the live streaming and that kind of thing has definitely increased. And being able, like we do a lot of sales online, like through the live streams now, where that wasn't really a source of revenue before 2020.
It's the touchy-feely, you can sell stuff without actually touching someone.
Sure. And like you could sit in your, you know, on your couch or in front of your computer and buy whatever you want instead of going to a Comic-Con if you don't want to, right? Like or instead of going to, you know, and like just watching people, like Whatnot. I don't know if, you know, I'm sure you've heard of Whatnot.
Yep.
You know, that's been you know, took off too during COVID. And that's basically what we're doing. We just do it on our own platform. But it makes
not to be confused by the comic book company Whatnot.
Well, no, I mean, it's the same company.
Oh, really? They blended.
They started their own imprint.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of their books.
Yeah, they started their own imprint. I don't know how well it's doing, but I know.
I don't bring it into the shop much because
I don't. I've heard
it's content.
Heard mixed reviews. I don't really know anything about their imprint, but you know, they listen. They took a lot.
I read the one book. It wasn't bad, but it wouldn't be on my regular collection list because it was a little YA-ish.
Gotcha. Yeah, they're very like they actually when we were going to do some stuff on Whatnot, they were like worried about our covers. I mean, they wanted to do a cover with us at one point, but they didn't want it to be sexy because they wanted to have a certain image they're portraying. We're like, well, that won't. You know, I don't know if that's going to work. But yeah, they're doing their own thing, and they're doing well. I think so. Good for them.
Well, they're still in preview, so they must be doing something.
I mean, yeah, sure.
And no ill will to anybody, right? Because that would be bad.
No, I mean, listen, they don't, you know, obviously, I think in this industry is very weird. Like, and there's a lot of, I mean, we're like the redheaded stepchild in this industry, and it's kind of funny. Like, and people really love to, like, our competitors are just like, you know, very.
Okay.
Weirdly bitter about Zenoscope. And
in that vein, are you familiar or did you hear about these two different instances where the comic book cover was too sexy, so they were pulled? Wonder Woman with Frank Cho, because if you bring Frank Cho to do alternate covers, dude, he does sexy women, and they're awesome.
Right.
But apparently the writer didn't like it, so it got changed.
Right.
And my favorite one was Spider-Woman for Marvel with a Milo Manara cover.
Yeah.
And if you're familiar with him, again, and it wasn't too over the board a cover either. It just happened to be a chick's butt. Not naked,
also,
covered.
Marvel it was so funny because when we started, Marvel was doing, like, they were still doing some sexy cover. Everybody was. And then everybody got very, like, sensitive to it. And then of course, I'd say, like, it really started to peak in, like, the mid-2010s, like, 2014, 15. Like, that's where it seemed like everybody, like, losing their minds, like, constantly. Like, I'd go on Twitter and see, like, people just, like, ripping on into us. Like
J. Scott Campbell's,
Yeah.
What the hell was it? It was Gwen Stacy. No, not Gwen Stacy. MJ. It's like, dude, it's art. If you're familiar with his art, it's what he does.
It was weird. There was like this weird movement of like, I mean, I guess like far left.
And it was the Super Me Too.
The Super Me Too camp like was like a cancel culture thing going on, like a super cancel culture thing going on.
Yeah.
When it first started, and like it was people you could tell. Yeah, weren't offended, just kind of like either angry to be angry or just it was weird because I was always like, well, 25, 30 years ago, the left was, you know, it was supposed to be fighting for freedom of speech. Like the whole point was like.
Yeah, what's his face? Larry Flint from Hustler.
Yeah, the Larry Flint movie like was all about how the right was trying to, you know, the conservatives were trying to censor shit. And like, this flipped. It flipped, and the left doesn't even realize like, and you know I I'm as left as you know can be really. Like I'm pretty middle of the road, I'd say, but I lean left on most social issues. But like, you know, in this case, it just it's to a point where you're like, wait a second, like you're skewing what's going on here, and you're kind of creating it. The far left, the far right are really the problem, I think. So, not to get on a political tangent, but my point is, you know, being offended by comic book covers never really I never understood that. And I never understood the reasoning why, you know, why people felt the need to be upset about it. You know, and comic book, you know, I get it when comic creators are not successful themselves or they're having trouble breaking into the industry. Sometimes they'll attack like the low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Like, this is all I need. I guess all I need to do is some boobies and I'll sell. But it's like, okay, well then do it. Like, I'm not stopping.
Yeah. I mean, this is the beautiful thing about today's world in publishing, either comic books, books, or art stuff in general. If you want to be extreme, there's a market for it. And yeah, I mean, you can get it to them.
There's companies out there now that just do a lot, like a lot more than we do.
Oh, yeah. I've seen some.
And, like, they're spawning everywhere. You know, they're coming up everywhere. You know, and it is what it is. And, like, we're like, mild compared to some of those guys.
Well, yeah, it's for you guys, it's just babes in bathing suits and scantily clad.
But
I mean, you've got the occasional topless, but...
Occasional topless, limited editions. Yeah, I'll see, like... It's kind of funny when I see, like, something tagged on Twitter, and it'll be some, like, really... And sometimes it's, like, just horrible artwork. It'll be, like, bad artwork with, like, just balloon boobies and, like, borderline porno... Like, you know, pornographic, I guess, in a way, and it's just, like, whatever. Who cares if somebody likes it? But
you're familiar with what hentai is, right?
But it would be like, oh, this must be... It would be like, Zenoscopes must be... No, their new book, and it's always Zenoscope. Like, it's always like everything that's nude or sexy is always a Zenoscope book.
Well, like, it's good to be known by something.
Yeah, and it's like kind of funny because I'm like, hey, like, it's no press is bad press, like, but the fact that we've become synonymous with like anything sexy in comics is us now. It's kind of kind of funny.
Well, you got to get Frank Cho on. Although who's he probably that? Commands big money.
What's that? I'm sorry.
Frank Cho.
Oh, Frank Cho. I would love to get a cover of Frank Cho.
Yeah, but he probably commands some big money. Which is fine.
I don't know how. It's also hard. Like, I'm having trouble getting Art Germ to come back.
Oh, really? Yeah. I like his art. He does some really nice work.
He's so busy. Like, I talked to him at a Comic-Con this past year, and I was like, how do I get you to do more covers? And he's just like, I'm sorry, I've been so busy.
Well, he's got a Marvel cover pretty much every month, consistently, and sometimes several.
That'll do it.
Yeah. So it's like, he's hitting the right peak, so that's good.
He did a lot for us. 10 years ago-ish, we do a lot of Art Germ. But then he got bigger and bigger, and then it was like Marvel. Once Marvel corners you.
Yeah, yeah, once you're on Marvel or DC Slate, it's like, oh, you can carry a lot through that.
Yeah, yeah, so. But we'll see. We got a lot of good covers.
I'm
good
sure he'll come back for some covers or two, or three or 500.
Yeah, never know.
So speaking of conventions, you mentioned Comic-Con. I went looking for you guys at Fan Expo Toronto this year, but you guys weren't there. It was so sad.
I know, I'm sorry. That was my fault. We were supposed to, and then we were actually supposed to team up with our Hot Flips, our friends at Hot Flips. And I had a bail last minute, so I couldn't even be there. And then, like, we just couldn't. We had to, like, kind of bail out. But I'm hoping to be back next year.
Okay, well, let us find you guys again that year.
I'm going to Toronto for the shows and stuff, so I do want to go.
It is a big show. I think only New York Comic Con and San Diego Comic Con are bigger. And I think there's a new one.
I mean, we did that show for about 9 years in a row, right, until COVID. We have yet to be back since COVID.
Yeah.
But we did love doing it. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. I liked the city. So it really is a big show.
We just won't say it's a really, really big shoe. Because I watch way too much old stuff.
That's fair.
But then it's okay. The Gen Xers, Gen Zs won't get it. It's like, okay, that's fine. Like old dad jokes. They won't get it. That's fine. It's all good.
They won't.
So, do you like doing conventions in general? Like, is it good? Is it effective?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, conventions really help build our brand. I don't know if we'd be where we are without the convention circuit, because we were, you know, coming into that scene 2005 and just hitting all the conventions all the time and being a friend. That's how we built a fan base, I think.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's not, I don't know, you know, the sales of conventions is different now. I think it's a little different because everything seems to have moved. Like, we used to get, like, when we do a convention exclusive, you know, before, like, in the early to mid 2000, you know, 10, you know, anywhere from like 2007 to 2019, you know, you do a convention exclusive and you get mobbed at your booth. But now, because of the live streaming events and stuff like that, it's not as crazy like that, where cool. people just need the convention exclusive because they can get it elsewhere. They can, you know, there's ways to get that convention exclusive elsewhere, but we still, you know, it's still a great marketing.
Cool. No, I like conventions myself. I mean, I look at the two ranges, the small ones and then the big ones, and the big ones are fun just to go and browse through and find cool stuff, and then small ones are cool to just talk to people. I like conventions. There's small ones and the large ones, the full scale scope. Small ones are great to meet people and just chat and get together and have fun. And then the large ones are good to find stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I still like going. I you know, they're not as, you know, you can get burned out, I think,
yeah.
easy from convention, the circuit. So certainly I don't go to as many as I used to. I mean, one year, I think I did personally like 20, and that was a lot for me. Like, we did as one year as a company, I think we did like 32.
That's a lot.
And I did like 20, and then like I think I did the next year, I did like, you know, 18, and I was just
32 conventions in a single year. That's like every weekend except for 20.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot, you know, and it's really when you think about the convention timing, it really is only like March through October.
Yeah.
So you're squeezing all those conventions in that, you know, in an 8-month-ish period. So, yeah, it's crazy.
But it's fun. Crazy fun.
It could be fun.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun. I mean, early conventions for us were early conventions were a lot of fun because, like, when you're in your like early, we were like early 30s going to conventions and like just drinking and having. now I'm like in my, you know, 40s.
You're still a young punk. Oh, you are compared to me, so it's okay.
But like, it's definitely taken on a different dynamic now than it used to. Drinking and the debauchery is not as, you know.
So not as much heavy metal lifestyle anymore.
No, not as much.
This is what happens when you get old.
Get old and it hits you and you're like, wait, where'd that time go?
Yeah. It's like, now you're looking around, it's like, hey, I can see the end over there. It's only a few years away.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Scary.
I stopped worrying about that shit. People always ask me, when's your birthday and how old are you? It's like, I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's all that matters is how old I feel in my soul.
That's true.
And I feel like a punk-ass kid most of the time.
Well, that's good. That's a good way to look at it.
What are you going to do? You going to worry yourself to death just wondering whether or not somebody likes you or they hate you? And it's like, whether or not they like what you do or don't like what you do and all that crap. It's like, that's their problem, not mine.
Yeah, that's something that comes with age and wisdom. Yeah. I think, like, you know, that sort of thing, certainly when you start to get into your... I think, like, for me at least, when I started to, like, get, you know, hit 40 and stuff, you realize, like, you really don't worry about
yep.
what people think or care
yep.
about.
None of that crap. Think. Who cares? Yeah. It's all their problem, not mine.
But it takes time to really, you know, yeah, with age, it's true. I mean, with age comes wisdom, you know, so you start to...
Wisdom, patience, and a thick skin.
Yeah, thick skin for sure, yeah.
Yeah. So, do you accept new submissions and stuff like that? Do you guys have a process for that, or do you just farm out talent?
Well, they do. I mean, we do. We have submissions. So if anybody out there wants to submit, sorry about my dog panting in the background. If anybody wants to submit, I got to look to make sure, but I think it's submissions at zenoscope.com. It's pretty easy. So that'll go to our editors to check out any submissions you have. So, yeah, we're always looking for new artists and even writers.
That's me. I can write.
So, like, sending submissions to that email, to go right to our editors.
Cool.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
I was really impressed at how easy it was to get a hold of you or to get a hold of somebody there when I was reaching out to try and get guests. It's like, went to a happy info person who then said, oh, well, that's not me, but I'll forward you over here. It was like, cool.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, listen.
That's a good indicator of a good culture. I like that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. But, it's like really, you know, we have a good customer service department. So Patty does our customer service, and she's awesome, and she makes sure, like, you know, she's so thorough. She's always like, she'll be like, you'll get some kind of obvious spam, and she'll be like, do you guys want this? And you're like, no, Patty, that's spam. No, thank
yeah.
you. But she's great. So
I mean, you go on these different social media things. Even LinkedIn now has porn bots. It's like, how do you not recognize that that's a porn bot and just ignore it?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like, it's weird. The whole explosion of that sort of thing is like, what do you guys get out of that?
Exactly.
But then I don't really want to know because there are those people that do follow those links.
This is true.
And that's why we have a dark web. But we won't explore the dark web because that's scary in a whole different world.
Yeah, no one needs that.
No.
That's no good for anybody.
So, this is a question I'd like to ask everyone. What's your favorite kind of cookies?
Cookies?
Yes.
That's interesting. My favorite cookies probably... I mean, classic chocolate chip is probably my favorite. But, like, I'd say a close second's almond cookie. Is that weird?
That is weird.
Yeah, like, I really like a good almond cookie. But it has
I don't think
be...
I've ever come across an almond cookie.
Oh, my God, I love almond cookies. Like, an almond cookie with coffee. Like, I'm a big coffee fan, so, like...
Oh! Have you ever heard of coffee crisps? It's a Canadian thing.
No.
So it's a chocolate bar with a chocolate biscuit, and then inside is a layer of creamy type stuff that tastes like mocha chocolate. So coffee based.
Nine out of 10 would try.
I like them.
Sounds delicious. I'm not a big sweets person. Like, I'm not like somebody who's like normally going to like cake or something like that.
So not like me.
No, I've never been a huge candy person, but I'll eat it. Like, it's not like I hate it. I just am not a connoisseur of candy and sweets. So when I do eat it, I'm pretty basic with it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you a suggestion, which I usually do whenever this comes up, because Canadian cookies are not as actually relevant or permeant down there in the States. I think only a couple of states at the top actually get them. Fudgios. So it's a fudge-based, like, Oreo.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I do think Oreos.
Oreos are awesome.
I haven't had Oreos. I don't really, you know, I'm just off sweets pretty much now, but like Oreos is like a top three cookie for me as well.
Excellent.
I'm all for that. Like a fudge Oreo sounds amazing.
And they taste amazing too.
Yeah.
I have four of them every morning.
You know, I wish it's funny because I just don't eat a lot of sugar and like I miss, like when I have sugar, like the good thing about not eating a lot of sugar is like when I do have something with sugar in it, it doesn't have to even have a lot of sugar anymore. And I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing.
So it impacts better.
It hits so much better. Like one time I quit coffee for like 6 months and I've been drinking coffee my whole adult life.
Cool.
And when I got, and then I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to like have some coffee. Like one morning I was like, I'm going to have a cup. Like I'm going to have a small cup. I mean, it hit me like, I was just like, oh my God.
Coffee's flying off the walls.
And for like 2 weeks, I was like doing like one cup of coffee a day and just sipping it, trying to be like, okay, like I'll drink it again, but it'll be one cup and it was like the most amazing 2 weeks, like back on coffee. And now I'm back to like, you know, my regular three cups a day, barely affecting me, which is sad, but that's how it goes.
I used to do 5 cans of Coke every day.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm now down to a regular standard of no more than 2 in a day, the occasional 3.
That scares the shit out. I'm so sugar averse, I would just drive me up a wall. I don't know.
Well, then I shouldn't tell you that. Sometimes I used to drink a whole case of 24.
Cokes?
Yep. Oh, working night shift with nobody else around, crank music, and allowed to do whatever I needed to do to get stuff done.
Remember Jolt Cola? That was
I think they still make it up here.
Okay. Yeah, that was when I was a kid, that was like my
favorite. That is disgusting stuff.
I loved it as a child.
A lot of people do. It's disgusting. It tastes like tar.
Yeah, I haven't drank it in so long I couldn't even tell you what it tastes like. But I like Diet Coke. I'm a big Diet Coke fan. Every now and then. Like I'm not somebody who's going to drink Diet Coke every day, but, like, I do like it.
We won't hold it against you.
Don't hold it against me.
Yeah.
I did have a delicious drink called the... God, I can't even think of it. It was tequila Mexican Coke, lime...
Ooh, and cane malt. Sugar Coke.
Yeah, it was delicious. I had that. Somebody made me that at a Mexican restaurant here in Austin.
Yeah, cane sugar Coke is the awesome.
Yeah, it was like tequila. Like I never thought I would like tequila and Coke, and salt rim with lime. And I was just like, wow, give me 10 of these if I could.
Okay, anyway. Well that'll keep you going.
Yeah. So.
How would you consider yourself sharing to people? It's like we're getting to the end of the show, which is always what happens when I'm not paying attention to the time. Fortunately, I don't have to rush, but it's all good. How do people find you?
It's pretty easy. If you could spell Zenescope, which is Zenescope, then you can find us anywhere. So, like, at Zenescope on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. Zenescope.com.
And for Canadians, /en-ca.
Yeah, there you go.
I just happen to be on the site. Oh, by the way, I read Necronomicon today. I picked that up yesterday or last week.
Oh yeah, how'd you like it?
It was fun. I love Cthulhu's story, so it was like this was a good treatment of the whole mad. What the hell was his name? The Mad Arab, and the whole monsters and everything. Yeah, it was fun. Yeah.
We're going hard with the Cthulhu. I'm not writing any of the stuff with that. It's mostly like Dave Franchini and Joe Brusher. Have been writing a lot of the Cthulhu. They're so into the Cthulhu. Like we do our story meetings, and like we were doing this whole Cthulhu. I guess this whole year of Cthulhu, really, with all the Grimm universe stuff. I'm sorry about my dog.
That's okay.
We're doing this whole like Cthulhu thing, and those guys are so immersed in it. It's like I'm like, well, what? Like, I'm like, you guys are writing this because this is like too much for me. Like, they're so into it. They would like, Joe and Dave will have like 3 hour talks about Cthulhu.
Just be worried when they start speaking Chthonic.
Well, I'll get worried. Yeah, I'm getting a little nervous because Joe was doing a ritual the other day. No, it's been fun though. It's been well received. So, I'm excited to see how it ends myself.
Yeah, Lovecraftian stuff has had a resurgence over the last couple years, and it's like, cool. I love that stuff. I always did. Yeah. I always will. There's flavors both ways. So,
yep. Yep.
Okay. Well, it is the end of the show, and Ralph, thank you very much for coming on the show. Appreciate it tremendously.
Sure.
And everybody, you can find them at Xenoscope.
Yep. Anywhere at Xenoscope.
And you've got a couple of forum groups on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and a few other things because I connected a couple of them.
Sweet.
And I think with that, I'll steal the rock off, where we say, every night, every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, come on back, find us on the Instagrams, find us on this Facebook, the Twitters, whatever else freaking weird social media things that's out there. We will talk about weird stuff because I love weird stuff. And I love talking about weird stuff. And I love talking to weird people about weird stuff because it's weird.